Sangye chutong so ki cho nam na Jong tu bar du dag ni kyab su chi Dag yi jin so gi pi so nam gi Du la pen je sangye du par shu I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha's Siddhara, the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections. May I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha's Siddhara and the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections. May I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient. May all beings have happiness and the cause of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion. The ground is covered with flowers, sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents and ornamented by the sun. By visualizing all this and offering it as a Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's appearance. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Saparivaratna Mandala Buddha Mega Samunda Saparana Samaye. Okay, welcome. Continuing. Sorry?
What page are we on now, please?
Yeah, we're on page 75, I think.
Yep.
Towards the bottom.
Two.
Number two. So we are in the midst of still covering the precious human rebirth, and that's in order to develop diligence. We're in the middle of a classic Buddhist teaching, which has three parts: the certainty of death, the uncertainty of the time of death, and the fact that at the time of death, nothing is valuable except spiritual practice. So we've done the certainty of death, and now we're going to study the uncertainty of the time of death, and that's certain. So we're at number two. Somebody like to start off the reading for us?
Reflect on the uncertainty of the time of death, and thus shorten the range of one's plans. A. Reflect that there is no certainty about the time of death because there is no fixed lifespan. B. Reflect that there is no certainty about the time of death because the causes of death are manifold. And C. Reflect that there is no certainty about the time of death because the causes of life are few.
So that first sentence is interesting. Reflect on the uncertainty of the time of death and thus shorten the range of one's plans. Mm-hmm. I heard a teacher talk about this one time, and they were saying, you need to really look at your long-term plans, you know, your 30-year mortgage, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that, and you're out there as if you're never going to die, and it's okay to make long-term plans, but make sure you reel it in every day that, you know, there's no guarantee that I'm going to pay off that 30-year mortgage. I could die anytime. So let's find out about these three topics, A, B, and C.
There's no certainty about the time of death because there is no fixed lifespan. Having thought that one will die due to the many reasons already described, still, it's possible that some might think, quote, though certainly I will eventually die, for some years I will not, unquote. Or one might think, during my early years I will work for this life, and toward the end I will practice Dharma. One might also think, well, this year I will collect provisions and then I will practice Dharma. However, there is no certainty that this will ever come to pass, because one does not know which will be first. The later years of this life, or the next life. Next year, or the next life. Next month, or the next life. Or tomorrow, or the next life.
And I would add, or your next breath. mm-hmm. and the next life.
Thus it was said in...
That's the aphoristic verses.
Mm-hmm. Since there is no certainty whether tomorrow or the next life will come first, it's proper to strive for the next life rather than striving for tomorrow.
We talked about that last time, didn't we? About next life is more important, next life is more dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The reasons for this are explained in...
The Abhidharma Kosha.
Abhidharma Makara.
Kosha.
Makosha. Here, the length of life is uncertain, the shortest being 10 years, and the longest being measureless.
Yeah, I'm not sure where that 10 years comes from.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about that one, and it's not even, I mean, it could be 10 minutes, you know.
Yes.
Anyway.
Well, exactly. Though the lifespan of human beings in the other three continents is fixed, there's not the slightest certainty concerning the lifespan of those in this world, of Jhampurvipa. Thus, it was taught, because there's no uniform age limit to a life, the life of some is finished while still in their mother's womb. Likewise, some die while just being born, some while just crawling, some while just able to walk, and some during their youth, and some after growing old.
We talked about this a long time ago in the beginning of the course, Jhampurvipa, ancient Indian cosmology, dividing the universe into various divisions. If you want to read in detail, the Sunday practice book has a long mandala offering that lists all the different continents and subcontinents and so on. And we live in Jhampurvipa, and apparently in the other continents the lifespan is fixed, whereas ours isn't.
Hmm. Oh, that's so neat.
So people know when they're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
But they can't practice Dharma like we can.
Mm-hmm.
You still want to be here.
There's always a downside.
Okay, now I'm another quote from the aphoristic verses. Would somebody else like to continue reading?
I will. Some die while in the womb, so too some die on just being born. So too some die while just crawling, some too while able to run about. Some old and some young, some while in the prime of life, like the fully ripened fruit, one by one they go. Therefore, there is not the least bit of certainty whereby one can have confidence that one's lifespan will not come to its end this very day and one will die this evening. As it was said in the Bodhicaryavarta, it is not proper to remain in leisure while claiming, I won't die this very day. There is no doubt that the time of my inevitable death will come. The time of death is uncertain because the causes of death are manifold. There is no certainty about the time of death because, one, body and life are easily separated, two, the Lord of death has no love, and three, there are many hostile forces, diseases, and malignant spirits. One, body and life are easily separated. Even though there may be a small remainder of life force, there is no certainty whatsoever that one will be able to live until it is finished. The reason for this is that obstacles that consist of hostile forces contrary to the continuation of life are manifold, and life and body are very easily separated. Life is like an oil lamp in a wick place. Even though the lamp's oil, wick, and the like are unexhausted, due to wind it has no chance to continue even for a little while and is abruptly extinguished.
Yeah, so we're going to go into this more detail. Even if you have all the conditions for life, something can just come along and, you know, literally, you know, stuff it out. Just like you have the lamp, the oil, and the wick, and everything is all hunky-dory, and the wind comes along and blows out your flame, you know. It's that tenuous, you know. And there's a quote from the letter for training. Would you like to read that?
Oh, okay. Like the flame of a butter lamp shaken by a strong wind, there is no surety that this life will remain even for a single moment. to reflect on the way in which body and mind are easily separated. Think of how the very chance of awakening from sleep or inhaling after exhaling is a rare marvel. As it was said in the...
That's the letter to a friend.
This life has many misfortunes like the lamp in the wind and is even more impermanent than a bubble of water. So it is wonderful that one has the chance to inhale after exhaling and to awaken from sleep.
So that's the first section. Now we'll go on to the Lord of Death doesn't have any love. Somebody else want to read?
Sure, I'll read it. Two, the Lord of Death has no love. The Lord of Death has no intention of thinking with compassion. This lovely one has not yet finished his work in life, so I'll let him stay for a while. Or, since he's not ill, I'll let him stay. On the contrary, like a hunter chasing a deer, he wishes to kill even a moment ahead of time. Apart from that, there is no other slight distraction. As it was said in the Bodhicharyatara, there can be no confidence in the Lord of Death, who does not wait whether one is finished or not. Whether sick or healthy, everyone should have no confidence in this accidental life. Three, there are many hostile forces, disease, and malignant spirit. Death may occur due to the disturbance of external and internal elements, due to the disturbance caused by spirits that lead one astray, or due to the disturbance caused by male gods and the like, and other malignant spirits.
First of all, when they say God, they're talking about spirits. They're not talking about any kind of enlightened being. And I'm not really sure why they singled out male spirits, because there are plenty of female spirits that can do plenty of damage. For example, there's a category called the mamos, which are female spirits that are, first of all, they're very big, and they basically take care of nature and wild animals. And because of all the bad stuff we're doing to nature and animals, they get agitated and they spread pandemics. So according to mantra healing point of view, the pandemic that we're going through is caused by the mamos who are unhappy. So there are practices you can do to pacify the mamos. They are definitely female and they can definitely cause trouble.
There are many causes of death by the external elements, such as being buried by a land movement, carried away by water, burnt by fire, or tossed by the wind over a precipice. There are many causes of death by the internal elements, such as phlegm, diseases of earth, cold disorders of water, fire disorders of fever, or wind diseases like heart air. There are 80,000 kinds of misleading spirits that constantly cause harm, such as stealing breath, complexion, and dignity. There are 360 kinds of male gods and the like, who will help one if pleased, but cause harm if displeased. All of these also can cause death. One may die fighting with enemies, one may die being deceived by kinsmen, one may die by eating unsuitable food, one may die by taking unsuitable medicine, one may die by being suffocated by clothing, one may die by a revolt by the servants. One may die by being struck by animals. One may die through being bitten by wild animals. Though there is none dearer to oneself than one's own self, still one may cause one's own death, as many are seen to commit suicide by piercing themselves or jumping off cliffs. In brief, one cannot have the least confidence that such inner and outer things, either animate or inanimate, will not become the cause of one's death. Since these and other similar things become causes of death for other persons, there is no reason why they will not become causes of death for oneself. C, there is no certainty about the time of death because causes of life are extremely few. One might think that there are many causes of life, such as rituals, medicines, food, and the like. Now, if any single one or even two of these three, life, karma, and merit, were exhausted, then rituals and the like possibility of protecting some people from an untimely death. However, they will not be of the least benefit when all three of these are exhausted. Not only that, but there are many chances of even these becoming a cause of death.
Yeah, so this is an interesting paragraph. If you think about it, the things that keep us alive, like food and water and air, all those things can also cause death. Mm-hmm. And so even the good things are risky for us. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's interesting here is you have the three causes of life, which are life, karma, and merit, or the three causes of death when those are exhausted. Mm-hmm. If you have one or two of those that are exhausted, it's theoretically possible that you could still revive your life through rituals, and there's lots of life extension practices and long life practices and mantra healing practices, and I mean, besides Western medicine, there's a lot of, you know, dharmic practices that you can do if only one or two of those are exhausted. But if all three are exhausted, time's up, game's over, there's nothing anybody can do about anything. It's just over, your time is done. So those three, life, karma, and merit, are three of the factors that keep us alive, mm-hmm. or not.
I find it interesting that life is there, you know, that karma and merit drive life. I'm just curious that life is one of the three in there, in and of itself. But I would think karma and merit would determine life.
It's a translation.
Yeah, I think that refers to life force, which I believe is La in Tibetan, isn't it? L-H-A, life force, La. Huh?
Bios in Greek.
Bios, yeah.
La is God.
It's also, yes. It's one of those words that has many meanings. But I think it means life force, your energy, your oomph. I'm sure that different cultures have different names for that, but it's not life in general. Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Where are we? I lost.
As it was said in the Ratnamara.
Okay.
The causes of death are many, while the causes of life are few. These latter even become causes of death. Hence, constantly practice religion. One might reason, even though it may be so, still I have youth and good health. I have the resources for food, clothing, and the like, and I'm free from harm caused by enemies and ghosts, so I shan't die. However, youth cannot defeat death, since newly born children are seen to die before the old, and decrepit, and who have to lean on a staff. Thus it was said in the Uddana Varga.
Yeah, that's the aphoristic verses.
Many born in the morning are seen, but some are not seen in the evening. Many born in the evening are seen, but some are not seen the next morning. Many men and women die in the prime of youth. What confidence can be placed in the life of a man of whom it is said, "This man is young"? Death cannot be defeated by healthiness. For healthy men, helplessness, interesting word, for healthy men are seen to die suddenly, long before a person who has been ill for many years. Mm-hmm. It cannot be defeated by the favorable resources of food, clothes, and the like. Rich men surrounded by servants, food, and wealth are seen to die before beggars who have to search in the morning for the morning meal and in the evening for the evening meal. Death cannot be defeated by freedom from enemies, for people who do not even hear the sound of enemies are seen to die before people who are surrounded by them. Also, it cannot be defeated by not having mischief caused by ghosts and malignant spirits. For many persons who dwell with a normal mental balance are seen to die before those whose every deed is harmful for themselves, due to their mind being corrupted by malignant spirits. As it is said in the Bodhicharya Vatara, though I now have such a day with health, food, and am free of persecution, still every moment of this life is deceitful, and this body is a reflected image that appears but once.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Does somebody else like to keep reading for us? Mm.
Therefore, if other persons are not able to defeat death, I do not have any reason whatsoever that would enable me to defeat it. Hence, if I examine it well, there is not the slightest reasonable confidence by which I and all others might happily dwell believing that we will not die tonight. The way to reflect on the meaning of this is to think, alas, since my birth until now, I have spent all these years on the path of distraction, and now I have reached the point of death. We who dwell in this world of Jambudvipa have no certain span of life, though it is possible that I may have a little remnant of life, still an untimely death can occur. The causes of interrupting life are extremely many, and it is easy to separate the body and the mind. The Lord of Death, the interrupter, has no love. There is no place I can flee to. It's free from those causes of interruption. And death may occur at any by any single one of those causes. I have no confidence that I shall not meet with such causes. For there is no way to know whether I shall die tomorrow, today or tomorrow. If I die today or tomorrow, I have not at all accomplished my previously resolved practice of death dharma. Oh no. What will happen to me at the time of death? From this moment on, at this end of life, where it is certain when I shall, where it is uncertain when I shall die, having cast off all essenceless worldly actions, I must practice the holy religion that will surely benefit me at the time of death. May the preceptors and the precious gems see to it that I may continuously impress upon my mind the death dharma. Think thus and make prayer.
Okay, so this death dharma is what I was talking about before, about death practices, of which there are several that you can do to be ready for this inevitable moment, and it being a dharmic moment for us and not just whatever. It's just really important. Huh?
A regret.
Regret or...
an angry mind.
Yeah, anything other than dharma. Just because of this crucial turning point, you know, it's so critical what happens in that short time period in terms of determining your next rebirth. It has a dramatic effect on that. It can actually override your karma. Spent lifetimes building. If your death moment isn't a good moment, you can override your karma and have a bad rebirth. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really important. That's this death dharma that they're talking about here. And also it says, may the preceptors and the precious gems see to it that I may continually impress upon my mind the death dharma. There's that aspirational type prayer again that we've talked about a few times. It's really important to make these aspirations because you're planting karmic seeds when you do that. Somebody else want to continue?
I can continue. In the intervals between sessions, one should not fall under the power of such thoughts as, today I must do this, and tomorrow I must do that. Instead, one must diligently practice with constant, strong remembrance of, if I die today, I must be mindful of the Triple Gem and the Light. And if I die tomorrow, I must be mindful of the Triple Gem and the Light.
Yeah, so what do most of us do? Well, today I have to do this, tomorrow I have to do that, right? I mean, yeah. Instead of Triple Gem.
Or what am I going to do tomorrow? I need to be busy.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the end of section 2. You want to continue, Nicole, section 3?
Yes. Reflect that non-religious activities are not beneficial, and thus practice the Holy Dharma. A. Reflect that the Holy Dharma should be practiced because food and wealth are useless. B. Reflect that the Holy Dharma should be practiced because kinsmen and associates are useless. C. Reflect that the Holy Dharma should be practiced because eloquence and power are useless. A. The Holy Dharma should be practiced because food and wealth are useless. At the time when one must surely die, however much one may possess of this life's prosperity, food, property, and the like, these will not be even the least beneficial. One cannot avoid death by giving them as a bribe to the Lord of Death nor can one save oneself by giving them as a ransom. They cannot be carried in the beyond. Rather, as with the extraction of a hair from butter, only oneself alone must leave, empty-handed and naked.
So this list of things that are useless at the time of death, prosperity, food, property, and the like, I think to today's culture I would add, and your body. You know, people do piercings and tattoos and hairdos and clothes and all this stuff. You know, all this energy and time and money taking care of our body, can't take that either. You know, the famous you can't take it with you includes that. Okay, and what does Shanti Deva say?
Thus it was said in the Bodhicara Vayatara. Though having gained many acquisitions and enjoyed happiness for a long time, at the time of death, I will go naked and empty-handed, as if my belongings had been snatched away by thieves. Not only are the wealth and prosperity of this life not helpful, but they cause harm to anyone who has produced a mind of strong attachment to them. As it was said in the Bodhicaryavatara, therefore, to whatever objects the ignorant mind becomes attached, just those very attachments will be amassed to cause a thousandfold suffering. Hence, the wise should not desire them, for from desire arises fear.
There's a story, a famous story about two monks who did a lot of practice, and they had their malas, they were saying their mantras, doing their practice. At a certain point, a deity, a female Buddha, appeared with a stairway from the heavens down to these two monks. And the first monk immediately jumped on the stairway and ran up the stairway to a Buddha realm. Second monk started to, and he dropped his mala, and he bent down to get his mala, and the stairway disappeared. Wow. That amount of attachment can stop you if it's at the wrong moment. Okay.
B. The holy Dharma should be practiced because kinsmen and associates are useless. However many one may have of loved ones, friends, associates, and servants, they are of no benefit at the time of death. They cannot reverse death by fighting the Lord of Death, nor will one be exempted on the recommendation of any of them, nor can they share the pains of death or go along at the time of death, for one must go alone, as it was said in the Bodhicara Vayatara. Lying on bed, though surrounded by my relatives, I alone have to experience the agony of death. Of what use are kinsmen and friends when the messengers of death seize me? Virtue alone can save me then, and that I did not rely upon. Not only do they not benefit one, but the sins committed for their sake follow one and help to create more harm. As it was said in the... Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, it's Bodhicharya Avatara. Or you can just say Shanti Deva, because that's the famous author. Okay. It's easier to pronounce.
Here in this very life, many loved and unloved ones have departed, yet the unbearable sins committed for their sake remain before me. Can I read that again?
Yeah.
Here in this very life, many loved and unloved ones have departed, yet the unbearable sins committed for their sake remain before me.
Remain with me, in other words, my karma goes with me. They're going to talk more about this in a short while here, about how karma follows you like a shadow.
I saw a saying once that said, the only thing you take with you when you die is your mind.
Mind and whatever's in it.
In it. Yeah, right. See, the holy Dharma should be practiced because eloquence and power are useless. However much one may possess of eloquence and forceful power, these worldly powers and riches are useless. For example, the lion, the lord of beasts, overcomes the might of elephants and possesses the power to cause a small deer to be unable to breathe merely due to the sound of its roar. But when the Lord of Death appears, all its own strength and pride weaken, and it has to die. Thus it was said in a...
Jataka.
Even the lions who subdue the splendors of the great elephant with their sharp nails and rip off and cut the head with their claws, or frighten the minds of others with the sound of their fierce roars, lose their power in arrogance when the Lord of Death comes and they lie down to sleep. Not only do these not benefit one, but the ripened results of attachment for and pride in this life's possessions follow one and help to create more harm. As it was said in the Shantideva, I have much gain and honor, many like me. If one holds such conceit, fear will arise after one's death.
Okay, would somebody else like to continue reading?
In brief, apart from merely being temporary causes to sustain life, one of the following can prevent death when the actual time befalls. It cannot be prevented by substances, mantras, auspicious events, great forces and eloquence, a brave and strong man, a rich man's wealth, the good conduct of a nobleman, or the words of a skilled speaker, nor can it be sidestepped by a clever person, run away from by a swift runner, or tricked by a magician. Thus it was said in Jataka. Though a good person can deceive the eyes of people in the midst of many assembled, the wonder of the Lord of Death is that his eyes are not able to be deceived by them. Non-religious activities are not beneficial. So, as it was said to King Prasenajit in the...
Yeah, this is the Sutra of Instructions to the King.
O great King, when the time of death befalls, pierced by the spear of the Lord of Death, one parts from one's pride, without a protector, without a refuge, without a great retinue, afflicted by disease, dry-mouthed. One's face is altered, one's hand and feet trembling, one's lips are drawn back, one's teeth gnashing, unable to rise, emitting a whissing sound. One's body is smeared by urine, excrement, and bad odors. One forgets about medicine, doctor, and food. One sleeps in one's bed for the last time, sinking into the river of the suffering of transmigration. One is frightened by the helpers of the Lord of Death. The continuity of breathing stops. One's mouth and nostrils open wide. One relinquishes this world. One goes to the next world. One embarks on the great change. One enters the great darkness. One falls into the great abyss. One is tossed by the great ocean. One is carried by the river of karma. One travels in a stationless region. One has no part in the sharing of one's wealth. One cries, "Alas, Father! Alas, Mother! Alas, Son!" O great King, at that time, when is no other protector except Dharma, there is no other protector except Dharma. There's no other refuge. There's no other retinue. At that time, Dharma indeed becomes a protector, a refuge, a support, an island, a great retinue. Therefore, Emperor, when the time of certain death comes, one's body is pierced by the Death Lord's spears, one parts from pride, one is destitute of protectors, refuge, and retinue, and is stricken by disease, dry-mouthed, one's face changes, one's hands and feet tremble, one's lips are drawn back and teeth gnash, one is unable to rise and emits a whizzing sound, one's body is smeared by urine, excrement, and odors, one forgets about doctors, medicines, and food, one dwells in one's last bed, one sinks in the river of the suffering of transmigration, one is frightened by the Lord of Death, one's breathing stops, one's mouth and nostrils open wide. One abandons this world and goes to the next world. One embarks on the great change. One enters the great darkness. One falls into the great abyss. One is tossed by the great ocean. One is carried by the river of karma. One traverses a stationless region. One's unable to share property, and one emits cries of lament. Think, what could protect or save one other than Dharma at that time?
So just to make sure we got it, Nagarjuna repeated all that twice. All those horrible things that can happen. However, the good news is Dharma will save you. Yeah. Okay.
Therefore, from this very moment on, one must diligently practice the holy Dharma and imprint the certainty of death in one's heart. If one does not practice Dharma now, then one's organs are perfect and body and mind are able to function, or when one's body and organs are perfect and the mind able to function, one will not be able to practice Dharma later, when the body is aged and the mind is senile and one has become a breathing corpse on that point of death. As Lotsawa said, one does not practice diligently now, then even if one practices when death is encountered, it's like putting on armor after having been wounded in battle, beating one's chest saying, alas.
There are some people who are following this online because they live in other cities. And one of them told me that as a result of doing this text and the sobering quality of the messages, they've decided to retire early and go into practice starting as soon as possible.
Excellent.
So it has had some effect on at least one person. Does somebody else want to continue reading?
Where are we now? 85, though one may think.
Okay. Though one may think, I will still die, even though I practice Dharma, but the manner of death is not the same. A superior practitioner dies happily. A mediocre one dies without fear. And an inferior one dies without regret.
Yeah, I think this paragraph is worth remembering after all this horrible description that we've been through. You know, the good news is the Dalai Lama says a Dharma practitioner greets death like escaping from a burning house. Mm-hmm. You know.
As it was said in the Sutra Lankara, having realized all things to be like illusions and birth to be like going from one garden to another, whether in times of wealth or poverty, one is not frightened by the suffering of afflictions. As it was said in the Bodhicharyavatara, therefore, having mounted the steed of the enlightenment thought, which removes all sadness and fatigue, one will move on from happiness to happiness. So who that is thoughtful would be lazy?
This is another interesting one. This comment about sadness. Dorjichang Sakyadaksha said one time that it's really important if you're going to be a really good Dharma practitioner to really get in touch with sadness.
Really?
And the reason is so you have renunciation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this whole section is about renunciation, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're caught up in, you know, materialism and whatever trinket is catching your eye, you know, and then you don't practice, and then you get to death, and you go, oh, I didn't practice.
Mm-hmm.
So the sadness is the first step to getting rid of sadness. If you skip over it, that's a kind of a risky strategy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said, anyway.
Yeah, it's like facing sad.
Do you want to keep going, or you had enough?
Oh, I'm okay.
Okay.
So are we at therefore?
Yes.
Okay. Therefore, having mounted the steed of the enlightenment thought, which removes all sadness and fatigue, one will move on from happiness to happiness. So who that is thoughtful would be lazy? When a person who has not practiced Dharma dies, he firstly has remorse for having committed sins and not having practiced Dharma. He is then racked by pain from his vital organs and finally dies afraid of the Lord of Death.
Just going back to the previous paragraph about where it says who would be lazy, mm-hmm. there's three different kinds of laziness. Mm-hmm. The first kind is just what we normally think of laziness, which is, oh, I really don't feel like doing that. Mm-hmm. But another kind is the laziness of busyness. Oh, I'm working hard, I'm busy, I don't have time to practice. It's actually a form of laziness. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is, oh, I'm not good enough, I couldn't do that. It's kind of a spiritual low self-esteem, which has no place at all. It's just laziness, you know. I just wanted to add that because I didn't put that in at the previous paragraph. So what does Shanti Deva say about all this?
One who today is taken to the block to be maimed of one's limbs becomes alarmed. One's mouth becomes dry. One's eyes become dull and the like. So one appears differently than before. If that is the case, then what to say about a weak one like myself, when I am frightfully stared upon by the messengers of the Lord of Death, caught by them and seized by the fever of great terror? To reflect on the meaning of this, think as follows. Alas, death will come to me, but it is not known when it will come. Other than Dharma, there is no method for benefiting death. But until now I have been distracted by unnecessary worldly activities, have been attached to the objectives of this life, and have held the insubstantial to be substantial. So I have not practiced even a little of the Dharma, which imprints death upon the mind. Alas, what shall I do in the event of death? Thus, one should think intensively and meditate until a most unbearable revulsion and intense sadness arise.
Okay, so there's your instructions if you want to do the three-step process. Been given a lot to think about, and it says think intensively and then meditate it until you get to that point where you're revulsed and sad. Then you can switch over to, I need the Dharma practice, I need this, you know. Somebody else like to continue reading?
I will. Further think. Now I have become more and more attached to worldly aims. If I do not practice the holy Dharma from the bottom of my heart, it would be like returning from a jewel island empty-handed. There is no greater self-deception than this. Therefore, I must practice the holy Dharma on which I can surely rely at the time of death. Also, I must do it now without coming under the sway of laziness and tardiness, and I must do it quickly. I must start vigorously, like putting out a flame that has caught my head and clothing on fire. Since food, wealth, property, and my beloved friends and kinsmen of this life will not benefit me at all at the time of death, I must discard, like spittle, the acquiring and guarding of them. Having directed my mind towards the preceptor and the precious gems, I will see to it that I have nothing else to do but practice the Dharma. May the preceptor and precious gems see to this and help me to fulfill my wishes. Think this from the bottom of the heart, and with intense longing offer prayers and the like.
Okay, so they even give you an aspiration that you can do at the end, after you've done the three-step process, this praying to the preceptors and the precious gem to help you. When I was living in Italy, I had a... Of course, in Italy, everybody's Catholic, by name anyway. And they said, oh, I feel so sorry for you, Buddhists. You have no God to help you. You're all alone. And it must be just awful being a Buddhist. And I went, well, wait a minute. We have the preceptor and the three jewels. It's not like we're alone. And that is part of the preparation for death, is you create that relationship when you're alive. And then when your moment of death comes, you rely on them because you've gone for refuge 100,000 times. And they're there because you've created that link, you've created that karmic connection. At your time of death, you have nothing to worry about. You're escaping the burning house and going on to better greener pastures.
Well, and also the deity religions teach people to fear death.
That's true.
So to die with a peaceful mind would be really difficult.
There are some like that.
Some, yeah. And now we're going to learn what to do between sessions in the intervals. You want to continue reading
sure.
that section?
Yeah. Even in the intervals between sessions, one should constantly remember the certainty of death, the uncertainty of the time of death, and that nothing other than Dharma will be of benefit at the time of death. If one sees or hears of others' death, and even up to the point where one sees a corpse, skeleton, and the like, one should think, I too have not gone beyond the potential to become such an object, nor have I gone beyond being the nature of death, thus cut attachment to this life. Whenever worldly thoughts arise, check the mind by mindfulness and settle in its own place. Do not associate with sinful friends who are attached to this world's activities. One should also be content with whatever one obtains for the sake of temporary sustenance, such as food, clothing, and the like. Prior to whatever Dharma practice one undertakes, one should first remember impermanence, and one should produce encouragement in one's own mind. Having goaded with the stick of impermanence whatever hearing, contemplation, and meditation one does, that becomes a real Dharma practice. Furthermore, it has the benefit of accomplishing one's practice quickly, so those who desire liberation should always hold impermanence in mind.
So there you have it in a nutshell, what we need to do to be ready. So that is the end of Part B, and because that was 50 pages ago, I don't know about you, but if you go back to page 20, you will be able to see that we're in the section on the instruction on the impure vision to produce renunciation, of which there were three parts, A, B, and C. So, A being the faults of worldly existence to produce renunciation, B being the instruction on the difficulty of obtaining the prerequisites, or the famous precious human rebirth, in order to evoke diligence. So we finished those two sections. Just to give you a bit of a GPS where we are and where we're going. And then the next section is the instructions on virtuous and non-virtuous deeds and their results in order to show what is to be accepted and what is to be rejected. So in other words, what to do and what not to do. So that's the next major section here on page 87. Can we go on? Do people feel like they've got some more fuel in the tank?
Mm-hmm. Can I say something, please, before we go further?
Sorry?
Can I?
Yeah.
The section that says, on 86, do not associate with sinful friends who are attached to this world's activity. Isn't that like most people?
Yep.
So, like, what is that? Am I not supposed to have friends? Like, that's ridiculous.
You're supposed to choose them carefully, I think.
Are you kidding me? That is, like, filtering so many people.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Absolutely.
I don't know.
It's your life. It's your death. It's your karma.
That's when it becomes obvious.
It's your choice. Nobody's making you. But there are the risks. You get in, you know, somebody puts you this way or that way. It's social pressure is intense for human beings.
That's why we rely on the Sangha.
It's crazy. I'm sorry. Okay, let's keep going forward.
That's Karen's point. That's why we rely on Sangha.
Right. Fair enough.
I don't think this crowd will lead you astray.
That's true.
So once a week, come here. No, but really, I mean, how many people have gone astray because they hung out with the wrong crowd?
Sometimes I have.
Huh?
Sometimes I have when I was a teenager and...
Yeah, maybe younger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Oh, we could probably go around the group and do a confession here.
Stories, yeah,
when I was young, I did dumb things.
No.
Boy, was I dumb. Because my friend was dumber and took me along.
Dumb and dumber.
Yeah, dumb and dumber. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's up to you. But your karma follows you like a shadow, remember?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments or questions or complaints? Okay, so section C, what to do and what not to do. Who wants to lead us into that one?
Mm-hmm. The instructions on virtuous and non-virtuous deeds and their results to clarify what is to be accepted and what is to be rejected. The words in the root treatise of the Vajra verses...
So excuse me, what is that? Do you remember what that is?
Naropa?
No, I'm sorry, Virupa.
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 Who is Virupa?
The ugly one.
Sorry?
Was he the first human?
He was the first human preceptor of this Lamdre lineage. He received it from the Buddha Narapmya. And he wrote a very pithy, almost nothing, just 12 pages, not pages, of... hard to understand text, and for centuries that's all there was. But this is a quote, or this is a reference to that pithy text.
For sentient beings with the afflictions is the impure vision. Indicate that within the impure vision, all these appearances of happiness and sorrow can be understood to arise from the performance of virtuous and sinful deeds. This impure vision consists of two appearances, the illusory appearance and the karmic appearance. Of these, the illusory appearance, while non-existent in ultimate reality, is the appearance of subjects and objects in the relative sphere. The karmic appearance is a particular aspect of the illusory appearance and consists of different appearances of happiness and sorrow, of long and short lives, of much or little wealth, and the like, because these appearances are the individual results of virtuous and sinful deeds.
Let's talk about that for a second. We've been talking about the impure vision all along, and the impure vision consists of two appearances. There's two parts to this. So the illusory appearance and the karmic appearance. The illusory appearance is non-existent in ultimate reality. So without going into a big, heavy philosophical discussion about reality, that's beyond our scope here, it is said that the appearance that we normally experience is illusory. Okay, and so that's across the board for sentient beings with the impure vision. But in addition to that, there's our individual karmic particularities which manifest in our lifetimes, happiness, sorrow, long and short lives, much or little wealth, and the like. And these appearances are the individual results of virtuous and sinful deeds. So we have this general illusory appearance, and then we have our own individual karmic manifestations that we've created through our good and bad deeds, which create another kind of impure vision. That make any sense?
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Are you speaking of what they call karmic imprints?
Yeah.
That are manifested. That's right.
So that when the imprints manifest, that's what you see. You see, oh, I'm rich, or I'm poor, or I'm this, right, or I'm that. Right. The imprints are there in potentiality, and then when the causes and the conditions come together, they manifest, exactly, and that's what you see.
Yeah.
But it's still impure. Mm-hmm. And think about that when you go home.
Yeah.
Okay. Should we go on?
Mm-hmm. To establish this, one may ask, if at the time of death, happiness, servants, associates, sorrow, and prosperity of this world do not follow one, will not the performance of virtuous and sinful deeds also not follow one? Oh, this is not so. As it was said in...
This is the instructions to the Emperor Sutra.
Mm-hmm. With the affliction of the passing of time, O King, at the time of death, property, loved ones, kinsmen, and friends do not follow. But wherever that person goes, his deeds follow him like a shadow. Mm-hmm. There was a play that was written, we think, in the 14th century called Every Man. Anonymous, no idea who wrote it. But it's about a man who was young and prosperous and in the prime of life, and suddenly the Lord of Death appeared and told him that the only thing he could take with him were his good deeds. And he had almost no good deeds to speak of. His good deeds were very, very weak. They were like a small child. And so it was his remorse and renunciation and contrition that gave strength to good deeds. And good deeds got stronger and stronger and held his hand as they went forward. This is exactly the same.
What century? What century was that?
We think the 14th. And it was in the 14th century that The Cloud of Unknowing was written, and the doctrine of privy counseling.
Not all Dharma is taught by Buddhists. Dharma is Dharma. Truth is truth. Right? Okay. Somebody else want to continue?
No, I'll get it.
Okay.
I believe it's also, it was said.
Yeah.
The,
Karma Sataka. Yeah.
The result of actions do not ripen upon the soil, nor do they ripen upon a stone, but they ripen only upon the aggregates that are grasped by oneself. A deed committed by oneself does not remain behind, nor does it follow some other person, nor does it disappear, like a shadow that follows a bird flying in the sky. It follows the doer and is not exhausted through the passage of an eon, or even more than an eon. Mm-hmm. Thus it is said in the Vinaya Gama.
That's the oral discipline.
The deeds of living beings are not exhausted even after 100 eons, but the result will only ripen at the time of the assemblage of the right conditions.
This is the famous causes and conditions. The cause is the karma. The conditions, if the conditions are there, then the karma manifests. If they're not, could just stay as your karmic seed for eons or whatever until the conditions cause the manifestation of it. That's kind of a simple version of explaining how it works.
To reflect on this, one, produce the desire to discard non-virtue by reflecting on non-virtuous deeds and their results. Two, produce the desire to practice virtue by reflecting on virtuous deeds and their results. And three, transform neutral deeds into virtuous ones by reflecting on them. Produce the desire to discard non-virtue by reflecting on non-virtuous deeds and their results. The first category has three parts. A. Reflecting on non-virtuous deeds. B. Reflecting on their results. And C. Reflecting on discarding them. Non-virtuous deeds. As it was said in the Ratnavali.
Yeah, The Precious Garland by Nagarjuna.
Actions produced by desire, hatred, and delusion are non-virtues.
So what did he just list there?
Three poisons.
The three poisons, yeah.
Just as the leaves, flowers, and fruits arising from a poisonous root are poisonous, so are actions motivated through these three. Attachment to one's own side, hatred toward the other side, and ignorance of the deed and its result. All actions motivated through these three are known as non-virtuous. If these are classified, they are threefold. The three actions of body: killing, taking what is not given, and sexual misconduct. the four actions of voice, lying, calumny, harsh speech, and idle speech, and the three actions of mind, coveting, malice, and wrong views. I want to make a comment. The Geshe-la pointed out that there were four for speech and three for the other, for body and mind, and it was because speech was so easy.
Mm-hmm. So easy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we think it's so innocent, right? Like sticks and stones won't bite bones, right?
Killing is to take the life of any other being with the intention to kill. Whether done by oneself or having ordered others to do it through poison, fire weapons, and the like. Stealing is to take the possessions of another for one's own through force or gentle methods, whether it is a small or a large item. Sexual misconduct is intercourse with a woman who is not one's own wife, with one who, though not claimed by a husband, is a relative up to the seventh generation, and at improper time, at the time of pregnancy, at the time of fasting, in an improper place, like a temple, in the presence of parents, and the like, and by improper passage, such as anal or oral. As it was said in the scripture, killing is the taking of another's life with intention, whether done by oneself or one ordered others to do it. Stealing is to take possessions of others' property by force or by gentle means. Sexual misconduct is intercourse with another's wife, or to be in an improper place, or an improper time, or by improper passage. Lying is to speak untrue words with the intention of deceiving others. Calumny is to speak various true and untrue defiled words with the intention of creating separation among others, whether they be in harmony or in disharmony. Harsh speech is to speak words that profoundly pierce others when they understand their meaning. Idle speech is the speech of listening to and contemplating wrong scriptures, and the defiled speech of flattery, songs, dramas, and tales of dynasties, armies, harlots, and the like. As it was said in scripture, lying is to speak untrue words in words intentionally with the thought to deceive others. Calumny is to speak various defiled words in order to create separation among others. Harsh speech is to utter unpleasant words that profoundly hurt others. Idle speech is to talk of wrong scriptures, and other defiled speech of flattery, songs, dramas, and the like. Coveting is the desire to make others' property one's own. Malice is the wish to harm others, produced by a mind of hatred. Wrong views consist of believing that the precious gems and the doctrine of karma and the like are not true. As it was said in scripture, coveting is the wish to make others' property one's own. Malice is the wish to harm others arising from a hateful mind. Wrong views is to hold the three gems and the law of cause and effect to be non-existent.
Okay, so there's your to-do and not-to-do list. Coming up, or what happens if you do non-virtue, the results? Do we want to go into that, or do we want to call that an evening here?
Let's call it a break.
Hmm?
I think that's lots.
That's lots?
Lots of projects.
Okay, yeah. So let's draw a line there so we can remember next time where we are. Thank you all for reading. And let's say our dedication. So nam de tam chazi pani tob na ne vedanam pam jete ke gana jimanam tu pe sirte sole do adorju
Jang Jusam Jogrim Poche Marke Panam Ke Yurjik Ke Manyam Parme Paryam Gong Ne Gong Tu Pel Parsho Jang Pa Pa Oji Tar Ken Padam Gundu Sang Po De Yang De Jin De Ge Da Gung Ge Je Su De Lu Chi De Wa Di Da Tam Che Ram Tu Ngu Tu Su Che Pi Kya Wa Tam Che Ki Nuwa Ganga Chutunga Pagi Dakshin Gewe Tsawa Yigunyang Sangpo Chuchi Raptu Nguwargi Chaksawa Dang Chuching Shapadam Jesu Yirang Gujing Sowargi Gewa Chung Zedagi Jisakba
By this merit, may all attain omniscience, may it defeat the enemy wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious, may it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen, may it never decline where it has arisen, but may it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way, valley, Manjushri, and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues, that I might train to be like them. Through this dedication, praise is supreme, by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attain the Buddhahood. By whatever little virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching, be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment. Thank you.